Hello and welcome everybody to the Plastic Recycling Update. We have a very special guest today, Howard. Howard, maybe perhaps you can introduce yourself to our listeners, and then that way they can get a very good feel of who you are, what you do, and the interesting things we have to chat about today.
Well, thank you. And also thank you for inviting me to participate in the podcast. Just a brief introduction. I'll be as brief as I can. I'm a 40-year plus veteran of the plastics industry in the U.S. And to boil it all down to a few comments, the first 20 years of my career, I spent as an executive within the plastics producer ranks and worked for several major chemical companies who produced products like polyethylene, polypropylene, polystyrene, et cetera. So worked in that environment for 20 years. And then following that, I joined a consulting firm in Houston, Texas, who specialized in the petrochemicals and plastics markets. It used to be called CMAI, and then evolved into IHS, and now is part of the Dow Jones group, Opus Dow Jones, and known as Chemical Market Associates. And I was their global business leader, practice leader for plastics, ran their plastics practice for over a dozen years. So recent years, I started consulting. Most recently, the last 2 years, I've been working with a company called StoneX. StoneX is a global financial services company, heavily involved in various commodities, and they're adding plastics to their portfolio of commodities that they offer trading and risk mitigation and so forth. So that's my current position as senior advisor on plastics to StoneX.
Just to say, you have a little bit of experience in plastic, just a tiny bit.
as you can see, all but you know, this used to be much darker years ago, like the color of your hair.
Awesome. So I think obviously the main purpose of today's podcast is to dive deep into what impacts resin pricing. What I like to understand and help our viewers understand is, what are the things that impact pricing to move sometimes on a daily basis and a monthly basis and a weekly basis, where they're going, et cetera, with a particular focus on recycled plastics. And obviously we're going to tackle that from a North American lens, of which you are an expert. So maybe we can start kind of diving into what is the current state of recycled plastics? What are the key factors driving pricing? And then kind of where do you see it moving in 2023?
Sure. And it's a big question, you know, I'm going to try and give you a concise answer as best we can.
Perfect. Yeah.
Well, first of all, to delineate between virgin and recycled, you know, there are some areas where there is crossover influences for sure.
Yes.
But then there are other areas where there isn't, you know, there is no relationship. And so you have to look at the two products, markets, or environments, you know, somewhat separately. There's also regional elements and other things. Let me start with a kind of a little colorful story that I used to tell. Somebody would always ask, you know, what are the main influences on price, on plastics pricing? And there was always that eagerness to find that magic formula, you know, crude oil, natural gas, plus or minus XYZ, and you come up with a plastics price.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, over the years, it's just never that simple. And the same applies in recycle, for virgin and recycle.
Of course.
And I remember putting together an acronym years ago, and I'll call it the Forrest Gump acronym. And let me just run through this very quickly for you, going with the letters of Forrest Gump. Okay. Feedstocks and energy prices. Mm-hmm. Very influential on cash costs for virgin, which again cascades into recycle. O for operating rates, you know, manufacturing plant operating rates, and how are the facilities and manufacturing sites operating that produce these raw materials. First R is recession. Second R, recovery. So in other words, the economic environment has a big influence. E for environmental issues, very strong element in recycle. S, shifts in inventory. You know, inventory levels high, inventories low. At the supplier level or at the buyer level, you know, all those influence market dynamics. And then T for trade, imports, exports of raw materials and finished and semi-finished goods. And getting into the GUMP area, G for geopolitical environment, very influential, particularly in recycle because of the mandates, law changes, and so forth. U, unforeseen events. You know, you could have a fire, an outage, a storm, you know, or some of these things that impact the supply chain and can impact prices. And then there's M, monetary policy. You know, is the currency weak or strong? And how does that influence the commodity pricing? And finally, P is plastics competition with other materials, paper, metal, glass, and so on and so on. So all of these things can have an impact on both virgin and recycle. Now, getting back to your original question, where are we at? Where are we heading? Certainly, there's no doubt that demand, consumption and demand for recycled products is in a growth mode and has been for the last few years. There's no question about that. And we see that continuing. Yeah, there's no reason for it not to continue as companies are trying to incorporate more recycled product into their packaging and finished goods, and government agencies and entities that, you know, control standards and so forth are trying to push for higher recycled content in products. So volumes and consumption rates are going to be growing. And it does speak to a kind of an escalating price environment because the supply-demand balance is still, I'll call it, evolving. You know, we're in a growth mode. It's a relatively young industry, and there are a number of challenges to try and balance that supply-demand equation, particularly in recycle, because there's so many formats that, you know, that recycle presents itself. So what are some of the differences between the virgin market considerations and the recycle? Well, take that whole Forrest Gump example, but add to that some additional areas, okay? And I jotted down a quick list. You know, the questions, is it flake? Is it pelletized? Is it baled product or something, you know, that's not in a finished format yet? Is it natural color, you know? Is it mixed color? Is it FDA? You know, is it appropriate for food contact or not appropriate for food contact? Also, location is so important because freight is an extremely important element, a cost element, when you're trying to put together a rolled up cost and a consumer price for the product. Government rules, regulations, and mandates, and so forth. Almost every municipality, town, city, state, country, province, you know, has got their own set of rules and regulations on what is recycled and what's not recycled, you know, and how much should be incorporated into finished products. And companies have set their own standards in this area as well. So the fabricator converter who's making a finished product has to also consider, what is my customer asking me for, you know? Then some other interesting things from a technology standpoint today, is it mechanically recycled? Is it chemically recycled, you know, and so on and so on. So these are a whole nother list of categories of dynamics, which can influence price, you know, for the recycled product. So anyway, hopefully I addressed, you know, that's a lot, but I hope I've addressed the initial question you asked.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there's a lot to unpack, right? Unpack Forrest Gump and his chocolates. So let's kind of dive a little bit deeper into this. You mentioned a number of factors, 10, 11 factors, if we count the double R. Where do you see, and I know you mentioned formulas are very difficult, right? There may be a trend line, there may be some factors that have heavier weighting on that notion that you have of Forrest Gump. Help us to understand, what are the big, big factors in there? What are some of the seasonal factors? If we're talking about unforeseen events, are there some seasons, for example, where you have more natural disasters in the Texas area, etc.? How about seasonality? Are there times when prices are higher, times when prices are lower? Let's kind of go a little bit deeper into, one, what are the big factors? And then two, what are the predictable factors that are easy to understand and get a hold of?
Well, let's start with the basic building blocks here. First of all, from an energy standpoint, you know, which kind of sets a base, a foundation for all these, most of these products, you know, much of the volume produced is still reliant on, you know, crude oil, natural gas starting points in terms of production. And you're correct, you know, that there's a region in the U.S. in particular, the Texas, Louisiana Gulf Coast, where, you know, all of the refining and gas processing, you know, which is the precursors to petrochemical and plastics production, all that's going on down there, you know, predominantly in Texas and Louisiana. And yeah, we've actually had in recent history a number of disruptive events. If you go back to February of 2001, for example, the big freeze, temperatures were well below freezing for hours and hours, days, you know, and these plants are built out in the open, not like, you know, if you go to some of the Canadian petrochemical and refining operations out there in Western Canada, you know, hey, everything is insulated and jacketed and there's steam on everything. And they, you know, they know how to keep things warm in the wintertime. But down in Texas, you know, if the temperature drops below freezing for any extended period of time, it's very disruptive. We had a major shutdown of most of the facilities during the big freeze. We had a mini event in December, again, in Texas, just this past December, and that had some disruptive effects on the operations. In fact, now, just the other day, there was tornadoes in the Houston area. I lived in Houston for over 20 years. I'm very familiar with the weather gyrations, and some of those impacted the production facilities. And there's some force majeure announcements as a result for things like polyethylene, polypropylene. So those have a ripple effect, you know, across the entire spectrum, and can influence and impact recycle, and virgin for sure, but recycle ultimately, you know, can feel the ripple effect. And it's not just the production of those products, but it's also getting the power. You know, sometimes there's power disruptions. They may have a lightning strike, a severe rain, you know, there can be flooding, which disrupts the transportation of the material, raw materials. Sometimes you can't even get the people in there. You know, if there's a significant weather event, the people that run the operation can't get there, you know, so you have to shut down for those reasons. So many, many things like that can impact on the baseline production of on the virgin side. And so the seasonality also, when you're looking across the spectrum of resins, yeah, certainly if you're looking at, say, PET, you know, there's a season there, you know, where you have soft drinks and water bottles and the barbecue and picnic season. People are going on vacations in the summer, spring and summertime, and things like this. So there's more consumption there. And so bottle usage goes up. And obviously there's going to be more availability, you know, of disposed of PET bottles, for example. Also, you have to look at the seasonality on the energy side, you know, crude oil and natural gas. Natural gas is still used predominantly in North America for home heating, you know, and electricity generation. So you're going to have an ebb and flow of natural gas prices throughout the year. And they were very high last year, natural gas prices, historically high. And they've been coming down, you know, quite a bit now. And they're down to more normal levels that we've recently seen in the $2-3 per million BTU. But you know, anything can impact that, and you can have a spike, you know, in either oil or natural gas. And yes, those ripple through the whole system, and can ultimately, there may be a lag time between the time you see one of those events and recycle pricing react. But you should be cognizant of what's impacting the supply chain, and keep an eye on those dynamics, I guess, as you're making your plans and, you know, looking at supply, your supply chain and your portfolio of products that you're bringing into your operation. I guess, you know, more specifically, in terms of recycle, the other thing is you've got to look at the industry. And we mentioned earlier, you know, that it's a growth industry. You know, there are growing pains. And, you know, you're going to have this disconnect between supply and demand requirements. So you have to look at companies that you're going to be working with? Who can you rely on as a partner, someone that you can count on for continuous supply? That's not going to, be kind of a fair weather supplier that's going to come in when they have a little something and you don't hear, you'll hear crickets if they don't have anything available. So that's an important element, is who you're going to partner with and do business with. That, and you may have to diversify your supplier portfolio. You may have to rely on multiple suppliers in this area who may have different products they focus on or different regions. And there's different technologies, being employed as well. And what works best for your manufacturing operation too, because not all end products are the same either. The level of cleanliness and the level of consistency of the product, flake to flake, pellet to pellet, and how it runs in your operation. And are you getting the desired finished product characteristics that you need, for your end product? All of those things certainly come into play when you're deciding on how to run your operations at this point.
Howard, have you seen any correlations between virgin pricing and recycled pricing across thermoplastics, across PET?
There's touch points. I guess the way I would describe it is that it's not as consistent. In fact, StoneX, as a commodities-focused company that offers a trading and risk mitigation, you're always looking at doing the statistics and trying to get an R squared and how prices track, with various indices. And is there a reliable index with a, 95% confidence result and so forth? Well, unfortunately, at this point, you could look at any individual resin. And, first you have to look, what's the level of recycle percentage going on? How's the collection? How's the processing? And and what percentage of that of the total is there, and how consistent is the stream and so forth. And PET obviously is one of the most widely recycled resins and probably has a higher level of reliability and correlation, with virgin and some of those dynamics. And then probably next below that might be high density polyethylene, and you go down the list. But each resin is going to have its own characteristics and correlation relationships, with those same elements that are impacting virgin. PET's probably got, I couldn't come up with a number right offhand here, but it probably has the highest level of correlation, I would say, at this point.
Is that because the ease of interchangeability in terms of the fewer grades available on PET versus PE? Is that because of the legislative environment where it's patchy and there's legislation in some states where there's not in others? And then it's just a question of, is recycled cheaper than virgin? What drives that?
Almost everything you just said, at different times. I think that's right. I think that's the conundrum, for the marketplace is at any given point in time, you can point to one of those major factors. And it changes from time to time. And as a buyer, you may sit there and go, they're just telling me, I'm getting a story, here's this month's story, and here's next month's story. But in reality, at this point in the evolution of the industry, and until a lot of these many, many issues and dynamics, get smoothed out a little bit more, and you get more critical mass to the overall marketplace, you're just going to have these variations and these elements that are impacting price on any given day. It really comes down to that same issue I mentioned earlier. Is there that magic formula? You take PET bottles, virgin resin, and you have XYZ formula, and you come up with a recycled price. Mm-hmm. Well, I wish it was that simple, but unfortunately, there's so many influences and dynamics going on. You just can't get there yet,
Right.
So, but because PET, for example, is one of the highest volume recycled products and has a very consistent stream, you've got the fiber business and you've got the bottle business, the big slices, but there's a big stream of bottle grade PET that flows through the marketplace, and it's a consistent, more consistent than some of the other products.
Right. Howard, if you were a buyer and you were to try and make a decision on IC pricing of PET, for example, is at this level. Do I buy just enough for the next week or the next month? Do I purchase additional spot to kind of supplement the contracts that I already have because pricing it seems like is lower? What kind of strategy should a buyer have when tackling or kind of getting a sense of what to buy, how to buy, when to buy? Rather not what to buy and how to buy, but when to buy probably.
Yeah, I think at this point, as a buyer, first of all, I guess you have to look at your company in terms of what's your company strategy, what kind of resources do you have at your disposal, and how flexible can you be? Because I think flexibility today is really important in this
Tricky.
market because of the variability. And so the first thing I would say is try to have realistic expectations. That there. It's not a matter of if there's going to be an issue, whether it's a supply chain issue, a quality issue, or a price issue. It's not if, it's just when. Something's going to happen to disrupt the flow of your business or the costs, and so you have to just expect that, and so have realistic expectations to start with, and then try to determine, how much inventory. Inventory it has become a has become a challenging issue over the years for many companies. And we've had a trend in many businesses of reducing inventories down to the absolute minimum because, companies got spoiled and they were used to just-in-time deliveries and you could get it on a whim, and quick deliveries and supply chains that were working, and that's not the case today. There's a lot more variability in your supply chain, and so you have to be prepared for, extended delivery times or availability issues and so on. So, yeah, if you can financially tolerate a little bit more inventory of certain products that are essential for you, yeah, keep some inventory, if you can financially, if it makes sense. And as I said before, you may have to also cultivate multiple suppliers. It's just the nature of the market is today that you try to qualify numerous suppliers, as many as you can, so that you have approved products from multiple sources. And I think, many professional procurement and purchasing people, I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know, but you have to have multiple suppliers that you can feel comfortable that you can go get their product that's qualified. And then I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say also, examine potential risk mitigation opportunities. That's actually why I'm doing what I'm doing with StoneX today, because there's more and more opportunities out there we're finding for people in the plastic sector who've never really even entertained doing some kind of hedge or risk mitigation strategy on their raw materials or some of their inputs into their operation. Plastics has always been a very difficult and challenging environment to do that. And what we're finding is that there are potential opportunities for that as well. So if your company is interested in that sort of thing, you can also explore how can I protect myself potentially, or create a little bit more of a cushion, be able to budget or plan from a financial standpoint. The year's coming up, I'm doing my strategy and planning and budgeting for the coming year. Maybe there are elements of the supply chain that I can do some hedging or risk mitigation with, and kind of lock in a known return, for that piece of my business for a period of time. So that's another potential element.
Are you hedging only prime? Are you hedging recycled materials? Help
Right
us
now,
understand.
right now the program is relatively new, but StoneX is offering contracts in polyethylene and polypropylene, and today it's prime. PET is on our radar screen. We're doing a lot of work to try and include an option for PET because it's a very highly requested material in addition to polyethylene, polypropylene. And we are looking at recycle, and we're in the midst of doing all that analysis that I talked about with trying to do
Wonderful.
correlations. It's trickier, it's more challenging on the recycle side because of all the added dynamics, you know, that influence that market. So there's so many more things to look at. So it's taking a little time, but right now, polyethylene, polypropylene, we have opportunities there. PET is on the radar coming up, and yeah, recycle, we're talking about that and doing some analysis right now in that area.
That's wonderful. I think maybe over a decade ago, the London Metal Exchange used to provide some hedging on, I think it was only polyethylene and polypropylene, but then they shut it down. I'm not sure exactly why, but it's interesting to see that come back, given the scale of just polyethylene, polypropylene is pretty massive.
You've been around as long as I have. I've seen iterations of attempts, you know, to get at doing this kind of work. And yes, I remember the London Metals Exchange, and they actually had ring trading, you know, on the floor of the exchange there in London. And I got to witness that actually. It was fascinating. But, you know, it's all a matter of the timing, the liquidity out there. Are companies open to doing this, you know, and how is it complex? Is it simple? You know, do you have the financial resources, and is management open to doing those kind of things? And what we're finding is that the environment, you know, is today, you know, there's more tools available. People are more open to looking at these things than they were in the past. You know, in the old days, you know, it was like, you know, when the price goes down, I buy more. And when the price goes up, I use my inventory and so on. And you know, so, you know, I'm not interested in that sort of thing. And you know, a lot of that mentality has transitioned over the last several years. And people look at their businesses with more sophistication and have better tools, you know, to be able to do these things. So.
Yeah. Wonderful. I think last question for you, Howard, is where can our audience find you? How can we connect with you?
Thank you for that. I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn. And by the way, every week I do a video update on the U.S. market, kind of talk about some of the general virgin pricing issues for mostly polyethylene, polypropylene, and some of the driving issues that are going on. So every Tuesday, I post a video. I'm on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter. It's HRAP_PlasticsX. So you can find me there. And the email address is howard.rappaport@stonex.com.
Great. Howard, thank you so much for a very interesting conversation and some easy to remember tidbits with Forrest Gump, for sure. Look, we'd love to have you back as you flesh out hedging for recycled materials and as you dive deeper into that space of the market. But it's been lovely talking to you, and I look forward to having you on again.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on. Cheers.
Okay, bye.